You're listening to Healthcare Now Radio. Stand by for This Just In, the latest in healthcare innovation and technology trends with your HIT advisor, Justin Barnes.
Thank you for tuning in and welcome to This Just In. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. In these segments, I'll bring you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. As always, we're broadcasting from the This Just In studios on the Business Radio X network, as well as the Healthcare Now Radio Network. For this episode, though, my 165th episode, we have a special show with two revered authors that will be discussing their new book, The Transformative Power of Mobile Medicine. But before we get to that, I'm excited to let everyone know that we'll be broadcasting the This Just In radio show again live from the HINS annual conference in Orlando on Tuesday, February 12th from 1 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. This will be our fifth year broadcasting live from the HINS annual conference. I could not be more excited. And many thanks to my radio show supporters, which are HIMSS, Lenovo Health, Intel, Business Radio X, and certainly Healthcare Now Radio. If you're planning on going to HIMSS, we'll be broadcasting from booth 2821, so please stop by if you're in Orlando and see the show. If you're not able to make the conference this year, you'll be able to stream our radio show live again at thisjustinradio.com. Again, that's thisjustinradio.com between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern. Last year, we had over 30,000 listeners, and it was a lot of fun and learning, and we have more this year as we have the best lineup ever. We'll have another great slate of CEO, CIO, leading care providers, industry thought leaders, riveting authors, and certainly policy makers joining this show. And to name just a few, Dr. John Halamka, Paul Serrato, Anish Chopra, Rasu Shresha, Paul Black, Ed Marks, Gomes, Andy Bartley, Kamal Jathwani, Brian Ayer, Nick Adkins, Evelyn Gallego, Dr. Jamie Skipper, and Dan Monroe, and many others. So hopefully you can join us in some capacity, either in person or online. For today's show, though, we're very fortunate to have two healthcare pioneers and leading healthcare authors, Dr. John Halamka and Paul Serrato. Welcome back to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Well, and very happy to be here.
I love it. I love our shows. We do them every year now. I'm grateful for it. And you guys keep on publishing phenomenal books. So thank you for that. Truly appreciate it. So before we dive in, where are you guys calling in from? So Paul, start off with you. Where are you calling in from, Paul?
I'm calling in from upstate New York. I'm about 60 miles northwest of New York City in a town called Warwick.
Excellent. How's the weather?
We had quite a bit of snow and ice in the last couple of days, but it's finally thawing out.
I know. I've been watching the weather and certainly thinking of you guys and thinking about this show. And John, are you here in the U.S.? I know you travel a ton, but where are you today?
So I am in Sherborne, Massachusetts at Unity Farm Sanctuary. We're about 20 miles to the west of Boston, where it is a blistering 40 degrees. It is the first time we've had above freezing weather in over a week.
Well, I know. I've been watching it closely. My grandmother lives about 45 or 50 miles from you. She's 94, still lives on her own. She's amazing. I checked in with her yesterday. I check in on her frequently just because of the weather and the cold snap and the ice that rolled through your neck of the woods. So, but she's doing very well. So.
Great.
So before we dive in again, I do want to know, you got Unity Farm Sanctuary. I follow it online. I follow it on Facebook. You are doing amazing work. So I would love a 30-second update for my guests. My guests follow it too. But I'd love a 30-second update on what you guys are accomplishing there and what you guys are doing.
Sure. Half my life is deeply technological and cutting edge. And the other half of my life is farm work. And of course, I try to meld the two at times. But we are the farm sanctuary for the greater Boston area. 250 animals, organic agriculture, 60 volunteers, serving the young, the old, the disabled, who all come to help with the animal care. So a labor of love.
Yeah, I highly recommend to my listeners, have it look at it and certainly support it. But I mean, it's just, it melts your heart. Every day I actually check it out because it's a great way to start your day. You see all the great work that John and his team and his volunteers do, and it just puts it's a great lens to see life through. So I do recommend you check it out. But we're here today to talk about this new book, and I've had a chance to read quite a bit of it, The Transformative Power of Mobile Medicine. So I'll start with you, Paul. What made you, how did this book come about, and kind of what are the, from your perspective, you know, what did you want to get across in the book?
Well, I guess one of the reasons why we jumped onto this subject is mobile is everywhere. I mean, if you go into ask Mr. Google, you know, how many people have cell phones, and they say by the end of this year, 5 billion, that's with a B, mm-hmm. have cell phones. So that's almost one for every man, woman, and child on the planet. And there's countless mobile apps out there. I mean, just in healthcare alone, there's about maybe 100, 200,000 health apps. So with those kinds of numbers, you really get confused if you're the average doc or the average patient. It's like, which ones do I use? Which ones do I believe? What's digital snake oil and what's a value? So it just seemed like a natural way to go after we finished our last book on precision medicine.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so, John, what are some of your thoughts about, you know, what compelled you to get engaged again with Paul and write this book?
Sure. So at Beth Israel Deaconess, where I have worked for 25 years, 80% of all patient access of all information and services of Beth Israel Deaconess is done via mobile devices. Wow. No one is sitting at home on their 23-inch screen with a tower, you know, trying to navigate healthcare.
Right.
And so just as Paul has said, recognizing that the modern patient and family needs tools to navigate a healthcare system which are uniquely mobile enabled.
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in that for sure, just for my listeners to think. Because I mean, I know people don't know that. I think as they did their research, and we've certainly read a lot about the evolution there, but that's very important to make sure that you are navigating mobile health and mobile apps and how you're integrating it with your care design and your care planning. But then also what this show today is about, and certainly your book is about, is what advice and wisdom, you know, can you share? First of all, I would say with innovators, and I'll ask this of you, John, what advice and wisdom can you share for innovators on building the most effective health app? Like, there's a couple hundred thousand out there, as Paul said, you know, but what are some of the best practices or advice that you want to share there?
Sure. So immediately you want to use a mobile application to turn data into wisdom and wisdom potentially into action. And what I mean by that is showing a patient, here are 43 totally normal blood pressures. Okay, what are you gonna do with that? As opposed to, for a person of your age or a person of your gender or a person of your body size, here's what you can expect, here's where you are, things are okay or not okay. I mean, imagine this. In your car, you have a check engine light. Mm-hmm. And when you see that, you say, oh my, I better take care of this now. What you want in a mobile app is, in effect, the software version of a check engine light.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So, John, asking you this, from a patient's perspective, should they look for in a good, effective health app?
So over the last 20 years, as we've looked at web-enabled software, desktop software, now mobile software, you always want to make sure that you understand the provenance, the history of an app. You know, was this created by two guys in a garage who are out there to sell you some nutritional supplements? Or was this created by a collaboration of nonprofit organizations, patients or providers with special expertise? You know, why is it that you should trust that this app is credible is really important. So we want apps to be usable, actionable, and credible.
Excellent, excellent advice there. There's a group that's actually out of Massachusetts, but they're in my think tank, and that's actually some of the advice. Useful, what was that? They had the three U's, but they ended with you have to develop trust. It has to be usable. I forget the third U, and that's too bad because I've just been speaking on it. But useful, and you have to develop trust, and you actually just kind of confirm that as well, because there's trust on both sides. That, you know, it's going to be secure, it's going to be have relevant information to me. I can actually use the app. It's useful to me in a lot of different ways, and it's secure, and you know, so forth. So completely
all good.
Yeah. So, Paul, from your perspectives, and I know you wrote about this in the book, why are docs so hesitant to recommend mobile health apps to their patients? What are a few reasons?
Yeah, that gets back to that issue of trust. If you look at some of the surveys, fewer than 20% of doctors are recommending apps to their patients. And one of the reasons is they do think of it as digital snake oil. They're concerned that, first of all, it's going to offer useless information, and worse, maybe it's going to offer them harmful information. One of the things we point out in the book is that there are several health apps that don't have the safety valves that need to be in any kind of app. When I talk about safety valves, I mean things like if the patient puts in information like I'm having suicidal thoughts, well, you don't want to continue a conversation on an app. You want to immediately recommend that that patient go to see, you know, a health professional. Or if a patient puts information like I'm having shortness of breath or chest pain, well, you got to stop the interaction right there. That's a safety valve that has to be in place. And docs fear that if those valves are not in place, that they are going to do more harm than good to their patients, number one. And number two, they risk a lawsuit for malpractice. So they have reason to be concerned, but sometimes they go too far in saying, well, if these apps are dangerous, that means they're all garbage. Right. And obviously that, you know, that's going too far.
Right. So what apps have good evidence to support them in that regard?
There's at least three or four organizations that address that question directly. There's an organization called IQVIA, Institute of Human Data Sciences. And they've done a real deep dive into the various types of clinical apps, health apps, apps for physicians and for patients. And they've put together a list of the best available ones. And they use like three or four criteria to figure out what to recommend and what not to recommend. It's sort of like a reliability scale. So apps that have support from experts might be considered useful, but not as useful as apps that are supported by randomized controlled trials or observational trials or epidemiological studies. So based on the various criteria, they came up with a list of the most useful ones that are worth considering.
Yeah, excellent. So following that train of thought, assuming a doc is convinced of the value of a health app, how does he or she choose, you know, what is right for the individual? Because it's not one size fits all.
Right. It's not one size fits all. And there are, once again, a list of criteria to help clinicians figure out which apps fit which patient. Obviously, you got to sit down and spend a little time with Mr. Jones or Mrs. Smith to figure out where are they on that healthcare journey. I have a number of male friends who the only reason they ever go to a doctor is when their wife insists that they go because of some symptom that they have. Obviously, when you're dragged to the doctor because somebody else wants you to go, you're not that motivated. So it doesn't pay to give someone like that an app that's going to have all sorts of bells and whistles, and basically a patient like that at the very least should be given something like a basic education tool so that if they want to learn more about their condition, they can. But then there are patients who are much further along on the journey and they may have a chronic disease and they really want to get it under control. So in a situation like that, an app might be one that allows them to ask questions, get general information, but then also sends them appointment reminders so that they go for their colonoscopy or they make sure that they're taking the medication properly. All those steps can be facilitated with the right app. And then all the way at the other extreme, it might talk about a cancer patient who really needs social support. You know, he or she needs to talk to other people who are suffering the same problems. So there are apps at that end of the continuum that can meet that particular individual need. So you really got to figure out where on the continuum the patient exists and then prescribe an app fitting those circumstances.
No, that's excellent, excellent advice. And for those just tuning in, we are speaking with Paul Serrato and Dr. John Halamka about their new book, The Transformative Power of Mobile Medicine. And I did just remember the best practices from my think tank. And the three U's are useful, usable, and you have to develop trust. So those are the three. That was clever when the guy presented it. It was great.
Cool.
So I'll ask this of both of you, and I'll start off with John. What are a few of the top-rated apps out there and why? And again, I'm not looking to try to give anybody free airtime or free branding, but I would love to, in your opinion, you know, two or three that you see out there. And if they're great, let's talk about them. Mention them.
Sure. And of course, I have no conflicts of interest and I don't endorse any product or service, but I have primary hypertension. You can't pick your parents. Yep. I inherited it from my parents. So for me, being able to monitor my blood pressure, look for variations, tune my medications, and use that as part of a whole program of wellness is important. And so it turns out Nokia and Y-Things, though Y-Things has now been spun out of Nokia, created a suite of apps and devices that help you measure activity, blood pressure, pulse, pulse oximetry, and even sleep. Now, let me give you a very bizarre example of why I think the sleep app is so good. Mm-hmm. So, Justin, you may not hear it, but today I'm speaking to you with a slightly gravelly voice. And that is because I have influenza A currently. Don't worry, it's not transmittable over an audio line. And therefore, I am coughing continuously, I have muscle aches, and my sleep is very disrupted. It's very challenging to assess sleep quality objectively, right? Because we all wake up at night. Was I up for 5 minutes or an hour? I don't really know. So there is a sensor in my mattress sending data to my phone. When am I asleep? When am I awake? When am I coughing? When do I have apnea, et cetera? So I can actually look over the course of the last 4 days I've had this disease and actually see that every night I'm doing better and better and better from absolutely objective data. Sensors and apps are teaching me that I am not getting worse. I, in fact, am on the mend. So those are just some examples that have been useful to me.
That's great, because that's actually personal to me. I have hypertension as well from my parents, and I manage it with a Y-Things tool, but I do not have a bed sensor. And so I like that. But I did hear my doctor did tell me that Y-Things is coming out with a watch device later on this year that I probably will buy. Not to replace my main watch, but I think to add on when I want to manage things, you know, more tightly or certain time periods. So I'm excited for that. Paul, what are some of your thoughts on top-rated apps out there?
Probably the one that I'm most impressed with is called Blue Star Diabetes, and that's put out by WellDoc. And it's got lots of support, scientific support. It's FDA cleared. That means it's accepted as a medical device, so you know that it's got that stamp of approval on it. It allows patients to send blood glucose readings from their meter directly into the app. It offers all sorts of coaching messages, that semi-personalized messages based on what your blood glucose readings are. So if take something really simple, like if your blood glucose drops into the low hypoglycemic level, it tells you, okay, well, maybe it's time for you to eat an orange or something like that. And obviously, they're much more sophisticated messages than that. But so one of the reasons I like it is it's personalized and it allows the patient to send information directly to their physician. So it's got that two-way interactivity. So that's one of my top choices. And I have no financial relationships with these folks.
Yeah, no, actually, I know that I chair a health organization in Georgia, and we actually use that tool with several of our diabetic patients. And what's really cool, exciting, and I think we're finally turning the corner towards transformative care, is we had just recently a insurer, not of one of the big ones, a more innovative one, offer our members a 30%, 20 to 30% reduction in their premium if they follow our care model, our care strategy, and that's to 1,000 patients.
Very nice.
We're starting to turn the corner now. We're using virtual care, telemedicine, and mobile devices in lower premiums.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ecstatic when that came through. It's been a long negotiation, certainly didn't happen overnight, but we're turning the corner. All this hard work and all this heavy lifting out there that we're trying to create better care strategy, integrate technology into care plans, reduce healthcare costs. We've bent the cost curve. I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, I would be excited too. When we wrote the book on precision medicine, when we did some book tours, we talked a lot about how precision medicine is the future. But when it comes to mobile medicine, it's not the future, it's now. It's happening now. It's just a question of getting enough docs on board with the right tools so that they can join the journey.
Yeah, we hit the 125 doc threshold. And that's when we had enough members as well in this care strategy that the insurers would take notice. It took us a while, but we got there. So,
excellent.
John, diving into some of the latest developments in mobile health that are out there, and I'm not even up to speed. That's why I was so excited to talk to you today. Let's start off with just the value of blockchain in healthcare. And I've just dove into this more over the last month, but I'd love, 45 seconds, a minute from you on the value of blockchain and mobile health.
Well, sure. So what is blockchain? Blockchain is a public ledger not operated by government or corporations, distributed across many, many trustworthy actors that you write to but can never erase. And so why might that be helpful in healthcare? Well, imagine this. Suppose with my mobile device, I want to exchange data about me in multiple ways. I want to gather data. I want to send it to others. What are my consent preferences? How do I want that data to be used? So some startups are creating blockchain-based consent mechanisms. So I write to this public ledger, which is not erasable or modifiable. Here are my consent preferences. Respect them. And that's a whole lot better than today's consent, which is sitting in a silo in a doctor's office or on a fax machine or in a filing cabinet. It really allows this sort of distributed, publicly available, what are my preferences and how are they respected? Or another way that we could use blockchain. This is going to sound a little bit far-fetched, Justin, but I just returned from Northern India. In Northern India, there are 1.3 million people with tuberculosis. The per capita income is $1.90 a day, but yet every family has a smartphone. And so the question, of course, is could you use some mobile mechanism to help people be compliant with their tuberculosis meds and treatment? What if we use the blockchain as a mechanism? Every time you validated that you took your med, you were on course for treatment, there were mechanisms that effectively guaranteed you took your med, you could get a micropayment from the blockchain. We're going to give you 10 rupees a day, and it's going to be a blockchain-mediated payment that comes to you when you validate through your mobile phone that you follow the treatment plan. And these are the kinds of things lots of folks are thinking about, using the blockchain mechanisms for consent, provider credentialing, data trust, micropayments, and that kind of thing.
That's fantastic. Great example, too. And a lot of uses for that here in America. That's terrific. So the other big one that we've started to study, I brought it into my think tank as well, but I'd love your perspective on this, is the potential use of Amazon Alexa and the Google Assistant, really the voice-enabled technologies and innovations. Where do you see that going? And even this year, where do you see this in 2019 and 2020?
Wow, how funny you ask this question. Because I am in the middle of a comprehensive evaluation of the Apple, Amazon, and Google Home ecosystems. And so, of course, I wouldn't do this over your audio broadcast, but my entire home is controlled by Nest thermostats, my entire lighting system by Wemo plugs, my cameras on the Sanctuary Animals Nest cameras, all linked together with a Google Home. So I can say, show me the cows on TV, turn off the lights, raise the temperature. I can control the entire environment around me with voice. Now, one would imagine that as we get to more and more mobile apps, more and more Internet of Things telemetry, knitting this all together with voice is going to be incredibly important. What medicines should I take today and when? My mom you know, who takes a couple of medicines, would absolutely benefit from having a personal assistant that would say, you know, it's noon, you know, make sure and take the green pill now.
Sure. Even in the hospital, this has application. I mean, if the Alexa is connected to some of the hardware in your bed and you're immobilizing the bed, you can ask, well, Alexa, please raise the head of the bed.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so Beth Israel Deaconess has prototyped 30 Alexa skills, mm-hmm. which include such things as, when is my next pain medication? When will my doctor see me? When am I going home? What's for lunch? And all Alexa driven. And so whether it's Siri, whether it's Alexa, whether it's Google Home or others, this idea of ambient listening, connecting data and devices and mobile apps is very powerful.
I love it. Anything you want to add there, Paul?
No, I think he covered it pretty well. And in the middle of me saying the word Alexa, my Alexa decided to listen in too.
Exactly. Well, gentlemen, we are actually out of time. I didn't realize. I just looked at the clock and the time is ticking down, but we always have so much fun. Last time we recorded an hour show. This time we only did a half an hour. I say next time we go back to an hour because we always have so much to talk about and just so much come from you guys. You're full of wealth and of knowledge. So thank you.
Just one last thing we wanted to mention. That
yes.
is that Elsevier is offering a deep discount for the new book for people who attend the HIMSS convention. So we just wanted to mention that HIMSS 2019, that's the code word, that would get people a deep discount when they go on the website.
Yes, and the book is fantastic. I've read many excerpts from it, and I highly, highly recommend it. Whether you're a patient, you're a health system, you're an innovator, check out the book and get your discount at HIMSS 19. But gentlemen, thank you very much. And thank you to everyone for joining us today. And please tune in weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustinRadio so we can respond to your comments from the show. If you miss any of this episode or want to hear more, all my shows are posted at Apple iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Google Play, and TuneIn. Also, you can check out the new website where they launched at justinbarnes.com. Everything is posted there. Thanks, everyone. Have a terrific week.